Hello, I'm your girl, your diva, Fasha, coming into you live for another episode of Night Talks with Fasha. So y'all heard me yesterday, and you're hearing me today. So you're getting me twice in 2 days. Very unusual, but I hope that you're enjoying it. So I hope that you had a great Saturday. I hope that it was a start of a wonderful weekend for you, and that you enjoy the outside, and spring has definitely sprung. So, but now I hope that you're somewhere safe, and that you are relaxing, and that you're listening to Night Talks with Fasha. So, I listened to this show. It was some technical errors that happened last Friday, and I went back and I listened to it, and I don't know if y'all heard it or not, but what I heard was not good. So we're redoing take two of Fasha in the Hot Seat. So of course tonight with me is my girl Riri and DJ Gibbs from HPS Magazine. Now, I don't know if Riri is going to make it tonight. She's supposed to. Hopefully, she'll remember and call in. But if she doesn't, I understand because she has family in town and her nephew is in town. And he just graduated from basic training. Yeah, that's it. Basic training. He just graduated from basic training, and he's in town visiting with her older sister. So she may call in, and then again, she may not. But it's okay. I think Deidre and I can handle this. So let's get started. Hello, Miss Gibbs. How are you?
Hello. I'm here.
How you doing?
I'm alive.
Well, that's good. that's good. I'm glad you're alive. I'm glad you are alive. Yes. So we are going to get started. I'm hoping that Riri will call in. I'm going to try to send her a message and see. If not, I think you and I got this. What you think?
I think it's good. We good.
Yeah, I
still remember some of the questions she asked, so it'll be like she's here if she doesn't.
Okay. Okay, great. I'm glad you remember because I don't remember anything. But anyway, so let's get started. This show is basically about a life update. I am an open book tonight. If you have any questions, if you want to ask anything, the number is 515-605-9707. You can call in, ask a question. You can stay anonymous. I don't see who's next. You know, you can stay anonymous if you want to. If you want to tell me your name, you can. But if I recognize your voice, I'm going to call you out. That's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
If I recognize the voice.
You will not be the first or the only.
No, absolutely not. So, basically, this show is just, it's a precursor to me attempting to do something different. I want to get into vlogging. And I know with vlogging, it's about your life. And with that, I have to be more willing
open.
To be more open. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I thought that this would be a great way. I'm in a safe space. I'm with people that I trust. And correct. I thought that this would be a great way to kick that off.
Put your toes in the water. Get your toes wet.
Yeah.
Which is true.
So that's
what
this is about.
Once you start feeling more
comfortable,
the more you'll be feeling, okay, I can open up a little bit more. Because it's a process.
It definitely is. It definitely is a process. And so that's what this is going to be about. Because starting in the summer, I am going to be doing some I have press passes in order to get some behind the scenes info, photographs, talks with the people. And I can't just be putting a microphone or in other people's face. I have to be willing to come off from behind the screen or the mic and show
myself. You
got to
show them that they're not alone.
Yeah.
You're willing to do tit for tat.
Exactly. So this is just a kickoff for that, me trying to get comfortable. And I thought the best way to do that.
By releasing control. Letting me start to open the gates of communication.
Yes, exactly.
So are you ready?
And yes. And so if you've been following me on social media or on Facebook, then you know that I give these life and cancer updates about my cancer journey and just my life in general. And so this is a live version of that, but I'm not in control. I'm not just, I have no control. No,
especially
I have no control.
So
I can't pick and choose what I want to talk about. Whatever I'm asked, I promise that I would openly answer those questions and be transparent. So, but I do have a safe word.
Let's see it.
I have a safe word.
What's the safe word?
Pineapples.
Girl, please. Anyway, moving on. Now, we're going to get started now because I normally sounds like I'm trying to cut you off because I am. Because it's time to relinquish. And we're going to get started. So we're going to go back to how it was in the first taping. And we're going to go back into marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Remind everyone again who you were married to and how you met.
Okay. I was married to, most people on the internet knew him as Matt Rice. I knew him as Michael Morgan. Max Rice was an internet radio personality. He had his toe in a little bit of everything, but he had a show called JGE BBW Radio, and it was what it said. It was about BBWs and all aspects. Dancers, models, if they were in porn, because he was the neighborhood porn pusher. That's what I call him.
Okay.
There are women, he dealt with women, he gave them a voice and a platform and a safe space to talk about what was going on and promote themselves. I guess some would say sex workers, but they were models, they were dancers and all of that. And some people, some did movies as well. So that's how, that's what he did. He asked me to be, he asked me to fill in. He wanted a woman on the show. He needed a woman. from a woman's perspective. And that's where I came in. And this is in 2012. We met on Facebook. Back then it wasn't Facebook dating or anything like that. We were just in a group, a Facebook group for BBW. And he was in there and he inboxed me. And so that's how we met. And that was in the end of 2011, the beginning of 2012. And we just became friends.
Okay, now,
it was a working relationship.
Who proposed to who? We'll get back to all of the other things, but we're going to hit little segments. Who proposed to who again?
I proposed to him. Yes.
And
I proposed to him.
Everybody's memory of how you proposed to him?
I proposed to him by saying it was in 2016, and I was having to have this surgical procedure. we were trying to find out if I had cancer then on my pancreas. I had a cyst. And so I was trying to get I was being put to sleep, and I wanted to get all my stuff in order. And so I said, Mike, we need to get married. And he was like, huh? Where'd that come from? I know, we're going to get married. I said, no. I'm not talking about in the future. You know, we've been together this, blah, blah. I'm talking about we need to get married soon, because if I'm sick, then I need you to be my husband, because I need you to speak for me. And the reason I felt that way was I'm an only child. My mother had already passed away in 2008, and by 2016, my father had vascular dementia. And I didn't have a lot of family. I mean, I have family, but I wasn't close to a lot of people that I would say, hey, I want you to make decisions for me if I don't wake up off of this operating table. And that's what happened. And so we got married.
Okay. Now, can you let everybody know how he helped you when you got the cancer diagnosis?
He was very supportive. and my cancer diagnosis did not come until 2021. He was very supportive. He was there. I was in the hospital from somewhere like the middle of October to the 1st of November. And he stayed there every day, every night. He was right there with me. I didn't have to ask for anything. I didn't have to ask for support. I didn't have to ask. He was just there. And even in that time of me being in the hospital, there was a moment where he had to be my voice then, because I was really, really sick at that time. And they had me NPO, and by NPO that means nothing by mouth. I had eaten all day because I was supposed to have had this procedure, and and so I hadn't had anything to eat after midnight the night before and by 12 o'clock the following day, the procedure hadn't happened. And by this time, I am not diabetic, but I am pre-diabetic, and my blood sugar began to fall, and I needed to eat. And he got really, really upset, and the nurse, the nurse came in and said, well, you can't give her anything to eat. You know, she can't have anything. The doctor wants her NPO, and he was like, look, it's 12 o'clock. It's almost 1. They are not doing any more surgeries today. They are not. I know. I've been in the hospital before. I know how the hospital works. after lunch, they're not doing any more surgery. So, well, I'm just telling you. And he's like, you go get the damn doctor. And so he got the doctor, and he was very upset. So he was very there. Even in the time that I had to go to Emory Hospital and I was going back for testing and seeing the oncologist, even when I had to have my put a port, whatever they call that thing, in your chest mm-hmm. to get your chemo, I had to have that surgically put in. And he was there. He was there
so
the first time I had chemo. Yeah, huh?
I said, so his love language was protection.
He had a lot of being with Michael, his love language, he had more than one.
He had more than one,
and he had a few, and he knew what I needed, and without me having to necessarily say, because I think the fact that we courted each other for a year and a half, almost 2 years, before we ever really met, because he was in Connecticut and I was here in Georgia.
Okay, would it be safe to say that the way that he courted you then helped guide you with how you date today? Because he set the bar up kind of high.
Yes. And no.
Okay.
There was only one Michael. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely have learned that I don't have to settle and I don't have to accept less than from any gentleman that I'm talking to or that's
correct.
Wanting to talk to me. And so, yes, he did do that. But then at the same time, I realized that I can't compare him and someone else because he was him and they are who they are. But
versus each other. It's just that was a way of showing love.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the respect. Just those natural categories, what we say that we want in a relationship, he showed
mm-hmm.
that they are capable.
Yes,
that you don't
absolutely.
Have to settle for less. Not that, okay, you got to do better than how he did. He just showed that it is reachable. And
it's attainable.
Acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely.
With that being said, we also discussed about your dating life, that there was an A and a B category of daters. And
mm-hmm.
we kind of reached the conclusion that one of them was just going to be a homeboy and nothing else. So the question for tonight is, what's the update on the other?
Honestly, I can't say if one is a homeboy, one is – I don't know. Because unfortunately or unfortunately, I like them both for different reasons.
Yeah, that's the perk of being of dating. You get to
mm-hmm.
make a decision. But
mm-hmm.
from what the past conversation was, you narrowed down to when – you can close your eyes, and there were certain scenarios that we placed in your head, like romantic situations. You didn't really see that with one particular of the suitors, but you could with the other.
Yes, and that's true. But in a week's time,
what has changed? Yes, do tell. What changed
is the fact, I think what has changed is how one of the gentlemen and I, how we communicate. We don't always see eye to eye, and but it's the way that we communicate with each other, and it's how we communicate with each other that has made me think like, oh, okay, I like that. The other guy who is younger than me. Yeah, one of them is younger than me. I don't know. He's younger than me. That's all I can say.
Is the fact that he's younger, is that a positive or a negative for you?
Right now, it's a question mark.
Oh, I can relate to that.
It's a question mark because, there are things about him that are very mature for his age.
We'll just say youthfulness.
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
And so that has kind of
coming to the
that has kind of shown
here.
Up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it has kind of shown up a little bit more as of late. It's nothing bad. I mean, because it wasn't that I didn't know that he was younger than me. I did know that.
But you didn't. But at the time, starting to see how it's coming out. That's all it is.
Yes. Absolutely.
Which is fine. Like I said, that's part of dating. You find out if you're completely compatible for long term is by dating.
True.
And has any of these two, have they made any suggestions of dating to be exclusive, or are they both still open? To where y'all both are seeing other people.
They have, in their own way, one has been very upfront and said, I want you for mine. Yes, he wants to be exclusive. Other gentleman, I think he does, but at the same time, he respects where I'm coming from, and because of where I'm coming from, and by that I mean the fact that I'm a widow. It's only been 2 years. Things are still very. Yes, things are still very fresh, and he's interested, he likes me, but at the same time, he respects the fact, and I respect the fact, that he doesn't want to be so like he's being dragged along. And I respect that. So right now, we are just friends.
Okay. That's good. Is there anybody else coming into the playground?
No. No, I think that's enough.
I didn't say everybody got to go home and play. I just said anybody else coming up to bat. But okay, since we have these two and we have you, does either of these men have children?
No. Oh, yes. One does, yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'm fine. Yes.
And from what you've experienced with him, how is he as a father so far, from what you can see?
He's really good. I mean, Because, well, for one thing, his children are much older. He has one younger child. But he's good from what I can
see
what I've
so
been
far.
Able to gather.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good dad, you know. I think that he is with his older kids, I think it's the relationship is a little bit more, I'm not going to say friendship, but, you know, it's more of a, they can have those conversations
because
they are of age, you know.
Yeah,
they can talk.
They
can talk freer.
More personal.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's a good thing. Because everybody can't talk to their parents about any and everything. So if he got he got that into that system, that it's okay to come to him. But that's an extremely good thing.
And he has, it seems as if he has a really good communication with the mother of his children as well. You know, they talk back and forth. And I try not to be one of those women that's like, oh, you can't talk to your baby mama, blah, 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 blah. I'm not like that. If you show me that you're respecting.
It's respectable. Yeah.
It's respectable. Then I don't have a problem with that. And so that's what it is from what I can discern, you know, it seems like they have a good, co-parenting or relationship between themselves.
Well, that's even better.
Yeah, he's very into his peace. He's holistic. He's very into peace. He's not into confusion.
He's more of a Zen guy. Would you say he's more of a Zen type of guy?
Yes. Yeah.
That's a good thing. That means they don't let a lot of things stress them.
Exactly.
That's a good
he does
thing.
Not. Yeah, he doesn't. He does not let a lot of stuff. He's, as a matter of fact, he is trying to help me not let a lot of stuff stress me. You know, like, you see bees in your feelings. You gotta come out your feelings. You and your feelings. You and your emotions.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm a woman. That's my prerogative.
FYI. He's getting brownie points from this from Texas. I said he's getting brownie points from Texas.
Yeah, someone else said that too. Someone else was like, oh, I like him. Yeah, because, you know, and he's straight to the point. He don't sugarcoat shit. Which I need. I don't need someone that's going to sugarcoat shit and just to come straight from the hip. And so,
okay.
I will say this: there are a lot. There are some things about him, and I've told him this. There are some things about him that remind me of Michael.
Okay.
Mhm.
Now, with that being said, that I'm not the only one giving him brownie points. How can I say this without getting pineappled? Let's see. Because we had a conversation some tapes ago where you openly stated you were ready
to
serve.
No, that itch, he has not scratched that itch. No, he is not.
No, that wasn't. Well, thank you for answering that, but that wasn't the question.
Oh,
but
okay.
Thank you for the answer. As I was saying, you openly put out there that you were open for service. It was a reopening, grand opening. Stuff was not being put on sale, but it was going to be a brand reopening. How does this particular person compared to the other. How, when they come to check the merchandise, who's more direct to the price and who's more direct towards the product, if that, you know what I mean?
They both are.
Which way?
They're both very, they have both, you know, one has let me know, like, yeah, but then the other gentleman is like, I'm not going to, you don't have to come to me. You don't have to tell me. I'm not going to try to do anything. I'm not, and I respect that, and I appreciate that. Like, when you're ready, you let me know.
But even when we know that you're ready to a degree,
mm-hmm.
when you're around each other, and this goes for either guy, who shows that they are using their full control to behave? Because
me and the other one have not met yet. It's going to happen next Friday.
Okay. So there's a part two for that question. Cool. Mental note. Okay,
but
so when it comes to the other guy.
We met once.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, you know, just me. Like, it wasn't, you know what I'm saying?
It was just
control-wise. Yeah, it wasn't anything like, it was just a meet.
Okay.
I had a nice time, but it was just a meet. That was it.
Okay. And since that meeting, when y'all communicate, does he give off the impression that y'all are getting closer to the point to where when y'all do meet again, that the physical attraction would be more intense to where,
oh yeah,
okay, you can see the okay, I gotta behave.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you do see that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you see that with the one that you haven't met yet? Because that emotional connection.
Mm-mm. I mean, if we got to Friday, we'll definitely
You'll
tell,
know more.
But
yep.
I do believe that he said that, you know, I'm waiting for you. If you make a move, then okay. But as far as me making a move and doing, you don't have that to worry about. And I believe that.
Okay. Time will tell. Ooh,
yeah,
this is real.
It will.
Time will tell.
Yeah, it will.
What is one of the stressors for you when it comes to dating in this era? Mm-hmm.
I have quite a few, actually.
I figured you would. But let's name off your top three. Just your top three.
Okay. Letting people into my space. It's been very hard opening up my, and when I say my space, it's everything. It's me. It's the spaces
mentally
around me.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. That's the top one. The second one would be actually engaging in sex with someone else after being with someone for almost 10 years.
Okay.
That stresses me. And just knowing what people's, I have not been able to my radar is not fully tuned to know what people's intentions are. I can't gauge.
Who's being authentic?
It's taking me a while to, because, you know, and you know, but I got into a situation where last year that it wasn't good for me.
But I hate to tell you that no matter how long you've been in the dating scene or in a relationship, there's always going to be that. That's not going to, no matter how good you get at tuning in and be able to catch, there's always going to be someone that's a couple of feet ahead of you.
Yeah.
So you just got to learn how to trust your instincts.
Yes, that's what I was just about to say. I was not, it's more of me tuning into myself than it is necessarily trying to gauge someone else. It's more about trusting my intuition, my instinct.
Exactly.
Hearing my radar. And I can say that depression, loneliness, desperation, a little despair made me very successful.
It makes you second guess because you want to make sure whatever your reason is, it's the right reason.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. a lot of people, men and women, go through that.
Mm-hmm.
When you've been hurt, even if it's cheating or death, that's a wound, period. Mm-hmm. So when you got to go through that grieving process, having to move on from it, it's the process. And you have to learn to start over. And that means trusting a different era, a time, a different people, because it's not the same anymore.
No, it's not. And you have to be willing to make some mistakes, but not so far that it's gonna cost you your life or your safety.
True.
But
you also have to realize that sometimes making the mistakes is the lesson. So that way you can understand what not to do. You have to experience it.
Yeah.
And if you've never experienced it, it's going to be wrong no matter what. But you have to experience it to know this is why you should not do this. This is why you don't do that. This is why when someone says this, you do this. So a lot of times people have to remember those negative experiences, they try to stay away from them. You got to go through them. Just like with everything else in life, you got to go through them to get to the better part. You got to go through the bad to get to the good.
That's it. Absolutely.
Now, trying to figure out how I can say this stuff without getting pineappled.
Because
I'm still stuck on that boasting of I'm ready for it. So I'm thinking, since you're not ready mentally for the real thing, have you started manually?
Yes.
Okay. Which villains?
What you mean, which version? Now you got me lost.
Huh?
Now you got me lost.
Oh, I'm talking about, the sex shop. So I'm saying if you're going manually, which way? Because you're not ready for the real thing. You're going the other way. So which particular items are you using? There's more than one.
What am I using? Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Because there is a variety.
Yeah.
There's plastic,
okay.
There's hard metal, there's electronics, there's so much to choose from. What's your pleasure right now?
A rose. Roosevelt is his name.
Okay. Royalty. Gotcha.
Roosevelt is his name. It was a
impulse purchase.
It was it was one of them purchases where it's like, I should get that. And then the next thing I know, credit card
It's a stepping stone. It's a stepping stone. Getting your feet wet in the water. You're not ready to go in halfway. You're putting your feet in. So you're getting used to the water. You ain't been swimming in years.
I had this experience that happened called Widow's Fire.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And
for those that don't know what that is,
Widow's Fire usually occurs with people who have lost their spouses or partners and they're still relatively young at age, 30s, in their late 30s, 40s, 50s, and they're still interested in wanting to have sex. And so Widow's Fire is where you just get very, very horny.
Yeah.
And you're just wanting to...
You just want the connection.
Every time you... Yeah, and that's basically what it is. And the only way that some people can truly, wind up getting that connection is they'll get it through sex when that's not what really you want. And I believe that's what happened to me last year.
Did you make an announcement?
I didn't make an announcement then. I was already talking to this guy. Last year.
No. When I say make the announcement, it was just saying about you being hormonal ready. You were having an over. That one.
Yes. Because I was looking for that intimacy. I miss the intimacy. When you go to bed, and you don't go to bed until your partner goes to bed, because you want to snuggle up under them, and now they're not here, and a lot of times you don't go to bed because you don't want to be in the bed.
Helps me understand someone to where I'm like, okay, stop, take him off my hit list.
Mm-hmm. It's a very... Grief is...
It's a tricky, and it's different for everybody.
It's different for everyone, but the general consensus is that grief is the love that you have and you have nowhere for it to go.
Yeah.
And your life is topsy-turvy. because you have for a year and a half, I convinced myself that my husband was traveling.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, he will be back. And it wasn't until the end of last year, maybe the first of this year, that I just really let go of that fantasy and accepted that he wasn't coming back. And I got so angry about
it. Yeah.
I got very angry.
Yep, that grief is a tricky little thing. It comes out in different formations.
Mm-hmm. And so,
one question that we had that we did back then, not to cut you off, was dating while dealing with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think has it helped you as you start processing of dating, or does it just hinder?
For me, it helps me.
Okay.
It helps me because I can be transparent.
Mm-hmm. So you feel like that's the icebreaker. Hey, I have stage 4 cancer. What about you?
No, I don't. It's not like that, but it.
That's one way to do it.
That's one way. It helps me to, when I say it makes me transparent, I can't hide it. Like, for myself, accepting it and being open and vocal about it. And I know, like, sometimes I feel like people think all she does is talk about this cancer. But I don't want people to think that. But
yeah,
the more I talk about it, the real it becomes for me. Because for me, I don't believe it.
Yeah.
There are still times I don't
believe that you're dealing with cancer. I get it.
Yeah. Like, I got cancer. Me?
But but one thing I like about how you're doing it is the fact that, yes, cancer is a part of my life. It's not the only thing in my life. Because you're not just sitting around waiting for it to do whatever. You're going on with your life. You're doing the podcast. You're doing talk. You're about to do other things. You're studying. You're dating. Putting your toes into dating. You're going on doing your living. So especially when people hear stage 4, oh, they just think death. You're a death's door.
Mm-hmm.
But you show that that's not always the case.
Yeah, exactly.
And
when I tell people, I try to deliver it that way. Like,
it shows the guy. Like, it shows, for me, you know, from when I don't know how long it's been since I've known you, where learning more about it, it just shows the strength and the confidence of the type of woman you are, because you're not letting something that's becoming that's a part of your life take over. So it shows your strength.
Thank you.
It shows your character. It shows your ability. Even when you're having a bad day, you still know how to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say that boss bitch and all other stuff, there's a Sasha involved in there.
Yeah, it is.
Sasha
it is.
Don't care. She going to get what she wants done.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes
she does.
Men.
Yeah, she does.
And that's something to be proud of.
Mm-hmm. It is, and it helps me. It helps me to, I don't want to say survive, but it helps me to.
But it does, to a certain degree, it is. It does help you survive mentally because it's taxing.
It's
draining. So, yeah, it is to a certain degree survival. It helps you when you're in survival mode because you're doing everything to. So when you have to put in more of a fight, you have more things on the other side to look back and like, this is what I'm fighting for.
Exactly.
It's not what you used to have. It's what you're creating while you're dealing.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Thank you for expressing that. You put that perfectly. I could not have done that. Thank you. I did not know how to put it as eloquently, and you did. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Now, if I can just get that on a T-shirt, it looks so good.
Exactly, or a hat.
No, it's too long for a hat. No, we're too long-winded for a hat. Shirts, maybe, because we can go on the front and back.
A bag.
Ooh, that too. You got to remember that.
Yeah, a tote bag. Put all my stuff in. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And sometimes,
I got a question. Not to cut you off again. How does having the cancer affect you in friendships? Did you have to go through those times where people distanced themselves off from you because they didn't know how to handle it, or they were just everybody was just there? You still are.
No. I lost a friendship because of my cancer. she had a friend that had already passed from cancer before, and
okay.
So. I guess the whole...
She didn't want to go through round two?
I don't know if she didn't want to go through round two or it was just the fact that she had her own shit she was going through. And she just didn't know how to handle it, I guess. I don't know. I can't answer that because we never had... had the discussion.
They just
why
distanced themselves, basically.
No, well, she distanced herself, and then me, in my feelings, I went off. I said what the fuck I felt.
Well, it kind of sounds warranted if they're your friend.
You know, it was just a lot of shit at that time that I was going through. My husband had died. I was in this house by myself. Going to chemo, driving myself to chemo.
Oh, the fun. I got
myself back home from chemo. And I needed someone to talk to. I just wanted to talk. I didn't want to talk about cancer. I didn't want to talk. I just wanted to talk about bullshit. And I called her. She wouldn't answer the phone. And then she would send me these little messages through Messenger. I'm praying for you. And the last time she did it, I just went flat the fuck off. I was just done.
Well,
don't keep telling me
right.
You're praying for me. Yeah.
How about you
can't even talk
it
to me, but you tell me you're praying for me? And so that was it. And We talked one other time, and then she told me she was taking a step back. And I was like, huh? She said, I'm taking a step back right now from this. And I thought, well, I didn't think, and I said, you don't have to take a step back. It's cool. I won't bother
you. From what you're saying, she had already took that step back. She just had to say it to your face.
Yeah.
Because what's getting you so hot is if you're my friend, why everything you send in a text, you can't call, let me hear it from your face. So when she finally has the time, she just said what she was doing. It's like, don't send no text, say it to my face. So you going off
was warranted. I try to not really.
It was warranted. Even if it meant at this time, y'all do need y'all spaces away from each other. But if that was a true friend, that person would have said what they needed to say to your face. Let them know for whatever, even if they didn't want to go all into the details, that they had just finished losing someone. They don't know about seeing another person go through it again, because everybody can't handle that. That's fine. It's respect, but be respectful about it, to say it to that person who you say is your friend. Because otherwise, you've just been using.
A lot of people say that I am hard to talk to.
Well, yeah, because you're blunt. You're going to put your feelings right there. So people are afraid that when they say something, they're thinking you're going to judge what they're saying, and that's their fear. Mm-hmm. When reality is, once they say whatever it is that they're so fearful of saying, it's not like, for you, it ain't going to be about squat. It's like, that's fine. Are you feel better now?
Mm-hmm.
Relax. Chill.
Mm-hmm.
It's all good.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times, yeah.
Oh, trust me, I know that story. But that's why I say if they're a true friend, they can get past that fear and still tell you. Even if they might not want to hear what you have to say because they're fearful of it's going to be judgmental or whatever, if they're your true friends, they're going to tell you. Good or bad, that's what friends do. That's the age. End all of end all. If you are true friends, just like a marriage, sickness and in health, you're going to be there. And if you can't be there, be a grown enough person to say it. And if you can't tell it to that person, you're showing that they were never your friend. But when it was acceptable for you.
Well, like I said, people say that I'm hard to talk to. And I've even had friends said that.
That gaslight.
What did she say?
That's true gaslighting.
She said that I accept things better for men than I do for women.
Yeah, that's gaslighting. That's always that's people turning things around to where whatever the insecurities and that issues that they have, it's putting on you. You're the reason. If you've been friends for years, you're being blunt. No, even for a certain amount of time, if you've gotten to know the person, no matter if you took the time to really know the person, you would know, okay, at least have a better idea of what's going to set this person off or whatever. Or he's like, they'll look at you sideways. But still, either way it goes, you know that person is not going to act a certain way that you're so fearful of.
Yeah, and I think also a lot of times I put on a very good front for people.
Yeah, because you don't want to see people, when people do something negative, it's not, people take it as we're very prideful. And it's not pride. It's the aspect of, I'm not going to allow someone's negativity to hurt me. So if I show that you, something you did or said has hurt me, that's giving you part of me. I'm not giving you that. So, so if to others, yeah, it might look like, oh, they're just being prideful. They don't want to let it. No, it's not to be people being prideful. It's like you threw something against my wall and it didn't break. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
Your stone did not break my glass. And I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
But.
And that's, thank you. Because that is, thank you. Because I'm not a hard person to deal with. I'm really not. I'm very compassionate.
From when we first started talking, we have had a lot of similarities and a lot of the BS. And that's why I said, like when you're dealing with a boy situation, I was like, yeah, I already know. That's why I'm like, no, it's not that you're full of, that you're prideful, that you're not going to show, oh, this person did this and they tried to hurt me. No, it's not pride. I'm not going to let somebody's negativity or negative actions affect me to the point to where they're going to see it. If I got to deal with something that someone has done to me, I'll deal with it, but you're not going to see it because I'm not going to give you that privilege. That's
exactly.
All that is.
Yep.
It's not pride.
Yeah.
It's not. It's just the fact that if you wounded me, you won't see me die. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a believer. I don't
wanna.
You can't see me.
Yeah.
But I will be fixed, and I will. When you think I will be gone, I'll be standing right there waiting for you to come back.
It's a way of protecting yourself.
Yeah, it's protecting yourself. But people who are, they're not used to that. A lot of people are not used to people with that mentality. They're used to, like, when somebody does something towards them, they talk about it. They get those emotions show. They do all those things. That's become the norm. So when you come across somebody who don't show it, I'm like, what the hell? It's like, she's judging. She's protecting myself because I'm like, okay, do better. It's like mental note. Just remember to check that area. It might be bruised, but no, you're not going to see no stuff.
Hold on. I think we have a caller that has a question.
Okay.
Hello, caller. Do you have a question, caller?
Hello?
I guess not. They're just listening. Okay. Listening.
You know who I was hoping it would be?
You thought it, you hoped it would be who?
I said, you know who I was hoping it was going to be. I'm like, when if he's got.
I don't want him. I don't want him to call no more. Let Joe stay where Joe at.
Oh, Joe's a
friend. Don't call Joe up. Oh, my God.
Joe's a friend.
Joe is a mess.
Like, Joe's getting himself killed with the topics that we're talking about and come with that crap that he normally comes with. He will get slaughtered.
Oh,
and I'm not even talking about mommy. You would have so many more people calling in with an option of, can we slaughter Joe Day? Can we have a slaughter Joe Day? And I could tell everybody.
I think the night that he called in and Warrior was on there and he heard that we were talking about something.
He wanted to ring in with Warrior. But I'm like, Warrior didn't catch on. I'm like, no, this is not a positive person.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
You about to see every woman on this podcast go off.
Exactly. Dweeb.
Okay, let's going back.
Okay.
Getting off of that one. What another topic So we dealt with the cancer, we dealt with the husband, we dealt with the dating, we dealt with the new stuff. What is something that you have begun to do now in your life that if you think back to like 5 years ago, you'd be like, I didn't see this part coming?
Vlogging,
okay.
Wanting to vlog. Honestly, there's a lot of me that I see that's not, that I didn't see 5 years ago. But the biggest thing that I can say is the fact that I am not hiding anymore.
Okay.
And by that I mean,
yeah,
I used to wear a mask.
What type of hiding are you talking about?
Just hiding me, who I am, not being my genuine and authentic self, putting on a mask and a little some imposter syndrome.
Okay.
So I don't do that now. Now I'm very I try to be very upfront. More
okay.
so than I used to be.
Would you say you're more blunt than you used to be?
Yes.
Mhm. Okay.
I do. I do. Yeah. To a certain degree, yes, I am. I used to.
What about more direct?
I am more direct. Because. I have to take care of me, not just physically, but mentally as well. And
yeah.
I feel like, as I've told some other people that I've, especially my therapist, I told her that I feel like the cancer that I have developed was emotional. Some of it was emotional.
Definitely. I think anybody that's diagnosed with emotional would be part of the thing.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Almost sneezed. Hold on. Oh, shit. It went away. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're good. How do you have you gotten to the mindset to where you're able to celebrate achievements to where, and that includes even with cancer?
I'm getting there. Mm-hmm. I'm
okay.
getting there.
What have you done so far?
Haven't done a lot, but last year for my 46th birthday, I wanted to dress up and I wanted to look pretty and I wanted to go to an expensive restaurant, and that's what I did.
Okay.
For my birthday, I did that. Haven't done a lot per se. I feel like some of my wins have been the growth that I've seen. I've celebrated and I've been celebrated. Riri is one of the main people that really has helped me to see and celebrate the fact that I have grown as a person. And so those little wins, those little things, you know, that a lot of people don't see. She's seen those, and she's helped me to celebrate and see and say, hey, look, a couple of years ago, you would have never done that. You know, you would have never said that. You would have never did that for yourself. So that's good. But I'm proud of you.
Reed's that right hand. I call Reed that right hander. It's like whatever you do, got going on, you can always look to your right. And that you have that person. So Reed is pretty much, Reed is that person for you.
Yes. She has been there the whole journey. She's been, you know, through everything. When I first was diagnosed, she was the first person I called. Yeah, she's my bestie. She's my sis.
That sidekick is a doozy. It's very hard to replace him.
Yeah, very much so. And I take very special care of that friendship and that relationship. I'm very protective of it.
No, trust and understand. Okay, let's talk about fashion. How has your fashion changed since your mindset changed?
Can I be honest?
Duh.
I never really thought I was pretty until I had no hair.
Why is that?
I never saw my beauty. I never saw myself as pretty until I had cancer. I never saw myself as attractive like that.
See, I'm reverse. It's like I loved my hair. So when my hair started falling out, I was like looking and being treated like I was a guy. I'm like, oh, no. This ain't working. So, no.
Well, now the falling out of my hair, the coming out of my hair, that traumatized me.
Yeah.
But I had to find a new identity. And in finding my new identity, I hid behind a lot of stuff, Deidre. I really did. I hid behind a lot of stuff.
I know a lot of people, females and males, that hide. I'm like, it's more relatable than people would think. But,
And to be honest with you, a lot of the things that I hid behind, they were stripped away. My hair. Yeah. I hid behind my hair. I would never go out anywhere unless my hair was coiffed to the gods. You know, like, it had to be done. It had to be. And then I didn't have any hair. And I had, like, all my hair came out after one round of chemo. It came out, I was by myself. Michael was in the hospital fighting for his life. And I went to wash my hair.
Breathe.
Came out in my head.
Yeah. It's a shocker.
I was devastated.
I have to deal with on that deep of a level. But when, because at first I used to have just one part of my hair to where I was like, I did like the old ball guy, just do the scoop. Just, we don't have that little side, that little part. But then there's one time I'm like, I'm doing my hair, and as soon as I rub my hair behind my ear, because that's where I always felt comfortable. As long as I had hair to pull behind my ear, I was golden.
Mm-hmm.
I did that little swoop, and all of the hair was in my hand. So I understand that shock value.
Mm-hmm.
Not the whole head, but I understand that shock value.
It was my whole, like, I washed it, and you know how you have to detangle your hair.
Mm-hmm.
When you're natural, and my hair had tangled up so bad, and I was like, why is my hair tangled so bad? And so I'm using my detangle brush to detangle my hair, and just big clumps
coming
of
up.
My hair was just coming out, and by the time I got done, I didn't have any.
So when that happened, when did you start seeing the beauty in you?
It was a couple of months later. I ordered the wraps that you see in my pictures and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I ordered those, and and I had just a little bit, I had just like a little patch of hair that was still, I was just holding on to it. I don't know why. I was just holding on to it. And I got Michael's clippers and I shaved it off. I shaved off all of my hair and the rest of it. And by that time, my head wrap had come in the mail, and I put one on, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I thought, I look cute. Oh, my God. I didn't have any eyebrows. I didn't have any eyelashes. Chemo had taken all of that.
Yeah.
And I showed Riri. I said, look, my head wrap came. And she said, let me see. And she was on the phone with me when I shaved my head. Because I couldn't do that by myself.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do it by myself. And so I went out one day, and it was springtime. And I got out the house. And I took myself to lunch, and after therapy, I took myself to lunch. And so I was sitting in the car, and I put on some lipstick, and I was like, because I hadn't worn lipstick in forever since COVID. And I looked at myself in the mirror, and I was like, I'm going to take a picture. And I took these pictures of myself.
Yay.
And then I took a picture of my head. I took my head wrap off, and I took my glasses off, and I took a picture of myself with a bald head and no glasses. I felt pretty.
Mm, good. So now with some of that coming back, you see, the hair is an accessory.
Yep.
It's not the main thing.
Yep.
You're the main character, not the hair.
And I had to learn that because, like I said,
you
did. I hid behind I hid behind a lot of things. Like, I couldn't go out anywhere without making sure, because I was a fat girl, and I couldn't go out anywhere.
Another Saturday night.
Yeah, you know, you can't just go out in a pair of shorts or a pair of sweatpants. You gotta put it together. And so
No. I went out there with the shorts and whatever. And let me tell you, when I stepped out where I was dressed up and had makeup on, I still to this day remember people get stuck at the front door because they see me at a booth and they're like, what the hoodoo?
Yep.
And then come standing next to you looking at you like, really? We had to go to the, we know you phone how long? Now you do it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah. Today I wasn't tired.
Yep. That's what happened.
So that's a pop. So there is, you can say that there was some positivity through cancer.
There's been a lot of positive moments.
I know, but a lot of people don't ever speak on it.
No, they don't.
Because
they don't.
It's cancer. But to, especially when it comes to emotions, and especially to the heart for females, when it's something that close and dear, yeah, it's like a kept secret that families want to keep, you know, keep on the down low. And when it's
yep, they do.
It's just reality.
It is. I even had the opportunity to get a wig for free. Like, they were gonna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard of organizations that do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were gonna do a customized wig for me. And I said, no, I don't want it.
No, you're good.
Yep, that's what I said. I'm good. And I've had the ability to change how I dress. And whenever I go to chemo, I dress up. And I put on... Yeah, I dress up. I put on my earrings and my head wrap and my bangles and my bracelets and a little dab of perfume and some lip gloss or some lipstick sometimes. And I'm sitting there and people look at me in the hospital. I come in and they're like, oh. And the nurses used to be like, because I would have to be at the hospital for doing my chemo for 8 hours. Because they were, I had allergic reactions to my chemo. And so I had to do mine in a hospital setting in case my blood pressure dropped, my heart rate dropped, and they almost crashed one time. And so, so I had to be there all day, and I wouldn't leave until I'd get there like at 8:30 in the morning, and I wouldn't leave till about 5:30 in the evening with the nurses.
You seen your
and so,
yeah, I was gonna say that was your work life.
Yep. And so I dressed up every day. I went in there. I had on something different. I had on something cute. And I couldn't sit up in the chairs. I had to sit in the bed. I did that for a year. I had to be in the bed to get my chemo because if my heart rate dropped or if I crashed, they already had me in the bed and they could just drop it and do whatever they had to do. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's been hard. I'm here.
Well, yes, you are.
I'm here. Right.
Stronger than what people would think you would be. Think that's only.
Yep. Stronger than what I thought I was.
We never know how strong we are until afterwards, and then sometime after, and we look back and like, oh, well, damn. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I pat yourself on the back. Yes, I survived that. So I'm like, okay, I can deal with this crap. Mm-hmm. I dealt with that.
And what cheers people out now is, like, my therapist. I use mm-hmm. a power wheelchair. I'm not mm-hmm. ashamed. I need it because now I have bone cancer and my bones hurt.
It hurts.
And so I now load my power chair on my car by myself.
Oh, good Lord. I know we do what we got to do, but God damn.
Yeah, I do.
I can't say anything because I know what things to where I get on my family gets on my case because it's like, if I would say something, they would do it. But I'm like, I'm used to doing it myself.
Yep. Well, Michael used to do it, and I didn't have to worry about it. But
there's no one else you could think of to even, like, hey, can you help me?
Mm-mm.
No one you feel comfortable doing that with.
Mm-mm. And there's really no one to really, I don't live in a community where there are people just coming out. And yeah, I just don't. It just is what it is. So if I'm going to go somewhere, like my book club that I'm in,
uh-huh.
most of them are, they're in Atlanta. And I load my chair up on the car by myself. I strap it down. I get in my car. I drive to Atlanta. And then when I get there, one of my friends, well, two of them, Ruby will help me, you know, if she's mm-hmm. there. But one of my other friends in my book club, really good friend, she's been with me the whole time.
Okay.
She'll help me get my chair off the car. And then at the end of the day, when we're done, sometimes she'll help me put it back on the car. Or sometimes a nice gentleman will come by and say, do y'all need help? Or sometimes I have now gotten to the place where I didn't used to do this, but now I have gotten to the place where I say, excuse me.
There you go.
Are you busy? Could you help me put this chair on the car? And they'll look around like, you do this by yourself? Mm-hmm. But I can't today. I have bone cancer, and my back is hurting pretty bad. And I got to try to get home. But I need some help. Do you mind helping me? Oh, no. No, not at all. Thank you so much.
I wish I could high five you right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because a lot of people wouldn't open up their mouths to even say it.
I didn't used to do that either. But
mm-hmm. That's why I would say everybody gets to that tipping point. Everybody's tipping point is different. But when you mm-hmm. get there, you realize it ain't that bad, as bad as you thought it was going to be.
Mm-mm. It was so bad that I had to have help one time to pump gas in my car when I was on chemo. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, y'all. I would get out and go driving. I drove while taking chemo, and then I would have to put gas in my car. Yes. And so I'm trying to put gas in my car, and the fumes of the gas hit me, and I almost passed out. And this man was next to me in the next pump, and he was pumping the gas. And he saw me swaying. He came around, and he caught me. He's like, are you okay? And I'm like, the fumes, I can't breathe. And so he helped me to get back to the driver's side of my car and sat me down. And he's like, "Are you all right? What happened?" I said, "I just came from chemo." "You just came from chemo? And you're trying to pump gas? So I don't have anybody else to do it.
Yeah.
We don't have, in the town I live in, we don't have full-service gas stations.
Well, don't worry. That's not in a lot of places anymore anyway. Even in the big cities. Those things aren't, I don't think that don't really even exist anymore.
Nope. They do up north.
Wow.
In a few places. But, yeah, so I pump my gas.
Yeah, we do what you got to do.
You got to do what you got to do. And I'm not saying it because I'm looking for somebody to congratulate me or pat me on the back. I'm just telling you what my life is like.
Yeah, it's how you survive. Because there will be times where you'll have the capacity to open your mouth to say, "I need help," but there won't be anybody around. So you got to be that other, that person that, to help you is sometimes going to be you.
Yeah, you have to advocate for yourself at all times, not just in small places or at the doctor or whatever. No, you have to advocate for yourself at all times. And I do. And I've learned to do that. I've learned to speak up and ask for help and say, "I need help, and can you help me, and do you mind helping me?" And there are a lot of good people in the world, and that's why I tell people, you know, there are so many good people in the world, and they just, a lot of times people just want the ability to help.
To do it.
Yeah.
They never get the opportunity to be like, "Oh, I can do this little bit of positivity," because they see it on Facebook or YouTube, and they never get that opportunity. But when they do, it's like it not only helps that person, but it spreads even through them, because it's in them, and they go tell others, and it just goes, it's a chain reaction.
Yep, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why I don't keep my cancer diagnosis a secret or hide it, or I want people to realize there are so many people that are living with stage 4 cancer, metastatic cancer. There are a lot of us. There are a lot of us. And we're thriving and we're surviving. But people don't know because no one talks about it. Nobody.
Yeah.
They don't put it out there. They don't put out there the triumphs, the goods and the bads. And you just hear, "Oh, so-and-so died and they had cancer," but I don't want that.
That's all they
I don't
hear.
Want
they,
that.
They don't, they don't think
don't
about what happens after you hear the diagnosis.
Exactly.
They just think of all what it takes away, but that nobody thinks about what it brings. Sometimes it brings the energy. It brings the courage. It brings the strength that you didn't know that you had. It brings it out of you. It brings the faith. It brings every traumatic, overwhelming tragedy aspect for each individual, because each person is going to have their own versions to where if it's cancer or something else that's going to change their life, how they deal with it and cope with it and learn from it, that's the similarity.
Exactly.
That's where everybody's like, "Okay, I can relate to what she's saying. I don't have it. But I know, I know that moment, what that expressed, that what happened in that moment in time, I do know how that felt." I know those emotions.
Mm-hmm. And if we don't share these stories and these triumphs and the good, how are people mm-hmm. going to, how is it going to be normalized of people living with cancer? Because people are living. Because
everybody, even if, not to cut you off, even those in support groups, everybody don't share. There's a lot of people that just sit there and listen.
Absolutely true. And I want, that's another thing that I want to do with cancer.
What?
I want the support. I want more support for us as Black women and men in cancer. There are not enough spaces, especially when it comes to Black women. And in therapy, I have learned that I had to take off that cape, that thing of that strong Black woman moniker.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't take anything away from me to take that off.
No, everybody.
But
even the strong need to be weak. They need to reload. They need to rust. They need to put their guards down so that way, because that shield gets heavy.
They need to be
loved. They need to be supported. Yes, you know that person is always going to be there for you and be your right hand, left hand, be your backbone, everything else. But they got to take care of themselves so they can do it for them and for you.
Exactly.
So they need support for you to step up, to give them the ability to rest, to be there.
Exactly.
Because if they don't have the energy to fight that battle, to keep them there, to be there for you, you're going to lose them more ways in a tragic way than just them walking away.
Yeah. That's true. I feel like there are, the world of cancer is lacking when it comes to how they treat us as people of color. And by that, I mean
it's not just cancer. Because I'm on the flip side with autoimmune disorders and stuff with that aspect. That, well, let's talk about that. And being Black, that support system is damn near maybe 5%. Try not to wear that. You do your best to try to not wear out the 5%. Try to make that sucker last as long as possible.
I don't know what needs to be done, but
I think this is a start.
I hope that my voice can make a change.
By every person that listens to your podcast, it's there in their mind. And when it touches them, they're going to speak on it to others. But therefore, the chain reaction begins. By speaking out about certain things, aspects of life, the things that swept under the rug or we don't want to show the world, when you bring it up to the light in this era, it's people are listening. People are understanding because people always want, because there are plenty of people who always wonder what to expect, because there could be somebody who just got diagnosed and they can know, okay, it's not a death sentence. This is how this, person who's going through it. This is like give a guideline emotionally. Each person is different. Help physically, but you can always help mentally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I want. That's what I want to do.
You've been doing that. You might not have realized it, but you've been doing that.
Yeah, I didn't.
You've been, yeah. So you have a platform, and you use it well.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, you thought I'm gonna say no? As many times as I've been on this sucker, of course.
That's true. You just made your home, honey. I'm glad that you made your home. I want everyone that comes on my platform to feel like they're at home. I want them
to be just like this. I have sitting around having those detox, understanding different perspectives of life that you probably never thought of or afraid to think about or afraid to ask because the topics are scary.
Yes.
But
they are.
You're being there to be open enough to say it. Yeah, that happened. It happened.
Yeah.
I got the diagnosis. I got this, but look what came out of it. My self-esteem has been brought up to a whole new level. My self-worth is on the point to where I wish a bank could afford it. There's so many aspects. So, yeah. There's a lot.
It's just like with anything else.
There's the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
It's life.
And please don't get me wrong. Like, the shit is hard.
It was like today before
this show. Like, I don't know what the hell happened. Well, yes, I do. I know what happened. So, in the midst of me being on other groups and and Facebook forums and things about cancer and medicine and all kind of stuff, I've come across some really interesting women. I even met a woman that's over in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And she has stage 4 breast cancer that has went to her liver like mine is.
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't heard from her. I hadn't seen her post. You know how Facebook is. So I went on her page to see how she was doing. And she had been in the hospital like right before Christmas. And then her birthday came. And she has, and that was in January. And she hasn't posted since. And there's nothing there. And I'm like, I wonder if she...
Your mind was there.
Yeah. And it hit me. And the next thing I know, I'm in the fetal position in the middle of my bed, weeping.
That's what I do. I cry.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Okay.
It's a sad reality But the reality, we all are going to go at some point.
Yeah,
a lot of people just wouldn't want it to be because of the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And to know that it's a probability, because a lot of times the system is not the cancer that'll take you out, it's the effects from it that takes you out.
Yep.
Your body, your heart gets tired, gets weak,
yep.
or something else. It's a different aspect, and it won't be the cancer that did it. It'll be just your organs. It just your body
mm-hmm.
couldn't fight it anymore.
Mhm.
But if that's the same thing, it's like if you got in a car accident, if your body is not able to withstand it, your body is going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. And everybody, when you hear cancer, it's that automatic, oh, it's a death sentence. No,
yeah.
Death is a sentence. Cancer isn't. Cancer is just one of the train coats.
Mm-hmm.
That on a long list of trains, on a rail, there's different categories. That's just one category.
It is. It brings your mortality into question.
It's longer
than what it would have been of what you thought. And I tell people, you know, I have been... There have been moments where there has been a time up until recently where
mm-hmm.
I had myself on a time clock.
Yeah.
I got to get this done. I got to get that done. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to do this. Because right now, I'm healthy. Right now, the medicine is working. Right now,
yeah.
I'm okay. I'm good. When it's not, no.
I definitely understand that one.
And there are things, there are a lot of things that I don't share everything with everybody. Because if I can't deal with it, how the hell is somebody else going to deal with it?
Because they
if
might have
I
the
can't process.
They might have the knowledge. This is why. Because they might have the knowledge or the wisdom that you need to hear if you open up. They could be that light that you need.
Sure.
So you have, that's the fear of any part of life. You have is the ability to open up, to be vulnerable. Even when... You got to be the strongest, but even to be strongest, you still got to be vulnerable. It's a balancing act,
and
it's not perfect.
No, it is not. So, I go to my oncologist and, oh, you're doing really good. But then he'll say, well, if you start having headaches, let me know.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait a minute. Huh? What are you talking about? Why would I start having headaches? Why is that concerning? Well, this type of cancer can go to your brain. The fuck?
They make you do that with slip ups. Right. Oh, okay. I thought you knew. You're like, does my facial expression and me saying what the fuck kind of tell you?
Thank you.
The answer would be no.
Yeah, and I told him, I said, is there anything else? Is there anything else that you need to tell me that I need to look for or that could possibly happen? Or that I, because listen, I don't want you to keep dropping little nuggets on me. Because when you do that, like, you're a doctor. You're not going
doctors
through it.
Always have to give the worst case scenario. They always have to give. They have to do pretty much go in the. They have to give the worst case scenario sort of to where you're be on guard. They do wish, they hope, well, like, okay, there are good aspects, or you could do this, but they have to, it's like, they tell you about the bad, but they hope for the best.
No.
But they have to get you prepared for the worst.
Just tell me everything that I need to know now. Don't drop little nuggets.
Everybody can handle it. Yeah, everybody can handle it, so they got to do it in doses. Oh, I know you
can. No, I told him. That's what he said. And I was like, no, don't do that. Because now you have me every little ache, every little pain. Every time I get a headache, I have to talk myself out of the fact and hyperventilating to the fact that, oh, my God, my cancer is going to my brain. Don't do that. Like, that's not fair.
Yeah. You put the reality back into it for them. Good girl. That's another high five.
If you're doing it to me, you're doing it to other people.
And yeah, you're
and
not
that,
realizing.
That's not fair.
Yeah, when you get to walk out of the office knowing you're okay, whatever. But if you don't pay attention, you're so used to telling it, having to tell it back over and over again, you forget the realization.
Yes.
You're really messing with someone's head right now.
Thank you.
Oh, trust me, I've experienced it. I told you.
Oh,
I
thought you knew.
No, nobody told. I was told one thing. You're telling me something different. I went through a cancer treatment, and I'm thinking, no, I was thinking I was doing something else, but, oh, it was a cancer treatment. Really? What is my facial expression
yeah.
to you? Yeah. Hello?
Yeah.
All right, so let me show you on the monitor. Awesome. Then, like, that's not what they told me. So they lied to me to make sure I took the treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can't wait for this next meeting.
Makes you angry. And not only does it make me angry, it makes me feel like I'm an experiment.
To a degree you are, because they have, because there is no perfect combination of treatment that works on everybody. So to a degree,
no, it's not.
No matter what the ailment is, you are pretty much to a certain degree a lab rat, because they have to figure out, okay, this will this work for this, and will it coincide with what other things that you have to do? And then it's like you got to go through the side effects and stuff. And I'm like, okay. And that's a mental thing you got to go through, because it's like, this is not your normal life. Why, this is not what
exactly.
you normally do. This is fun. Like,
exactly.
So you got to go through. Okay, the part, you have to get past the part, okay, this, I rebuke this, and then you go through the realization, you can rebuke it all you want to, but this is what you need to stay alive.
Exactly. I realize that I am a lab rat. I get that. And I have long ago accepted that to a certain degree. But it's like I told my primary doctor. I told him, I said, I know that you're giving this combination of drugs hoping that something sticks. But I get that. But I don't want you to treat me like a lab rat. Like, have enough respect for me to know that I'm a person.
That's one thing I tell my doctor. I can accept you saying you don't know. That mm-hmm. is fine. Just mm-hmm. don't, because you don't know, don't come at me like I'm making it up, because you don't
mm-hmm.
know. That's mm-hmm. where you will see the ignorant black woman come out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wouldn't be wasting my time, my money, the energy that I have to come around and for BS.
Thank
to
you.
Go smoke up somebody's butt. No, I'm not trying
Thank
to go through
you.
All these treatments. I'm not trying to get zapped for 2 hours or like I'm being on a taser for you to come up with, oh,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. Fine, that's fine. So you
sure.
have to make it up. That's where we have a problem. Just say you mm-hmm. don't know. Either refer to someone else or you don't know what else to do. Those are acceptable
mm-hmm.
situations because it's a give and take. It's life. Every one thing is not going to show for the other. But
mm-hmm.
that respect level, that's where.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Yep. That's... It's like there's some of them, they get so. They're so consumed with it, they detach the realization.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these are humans, so they detach
mm-hmm.
the emotional aspect because they have to give so much negative. So they have their own walls up. I'm like, you can have your wall up and still be respectful.
Exactly.
I'm not gonna hit you. I can't say I won't hit you. There was one person. I did. They had to block my foot. Almost got a vasectomy.
I kicked my gynecologist once because it hurt, and I told him that it hurt. And so
they were testing for me. They was I got tricked. I was thinking I was going for it was something like an EKG. You know what? It puts the tabs
mm-hmm.
on you. So I
mm-hmm.
was under the assumption that it was going to be similar to that. No. It was me basically being tasered up and down both legs for almost 4 hours.
Oh, Lord.
And he says, oh, you're sensitive. I'm like, yeah. Taste that leg because they were trying to figure out about the nerve damage.
Yep.
In my leg. And when he realized, okay, yes, sensitive, he hit one because he had to change the volume because the volume gets up to the point to where it's like all you hear is it just
mm-hmm.
gets loud.
Yeah.
And he hit one nerve, that chain reaction to my healthy leg going straight for his crotch.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to duck, you know, pull back before my foot landed on him. So he was,
mm-hmm.
I guess it's sensitive.
God, the world.
And during the rest of that,
during the rest of that test, that
hand stayed on that foot.
I know it did.
I don't know. He didn't want that vasectomy. He wants to be able to produce somebody's kid.
Mm-hmm. He wants them family jewels protected. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've had one of those before on one of my legs as well. It's not a comfortable
yeah.
thing at all.
It's one thing for not being comfortable, but it's like, to realize it's not even close to what you had in your mind, what you was about to
no,
do.
No, it's nothing like EKG. No.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
And
no.
When the killer part is, the guy that did, the technician that did it, he didn't document something right. Because I said, he asked if I was like, did I have back pain? I said, majority of the time, yes. He put no.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you have to get to go through the insurance. Oh, it's like, oh, everything's fine. I'm like, how is it fine? Because I'm like, you put the thing on full blast, and the nerve that you hit put on, and where I'm supposed to be sensitive, why my leg ain't jumping? They can't answer that question. But when I go to other, because I work with doctors, at that time I work with doctors, I asked one of the doctors who dealt with that. She goes, that's not normal. I'm like, thank you. I just need confirmation that, yeah, they're just going for insurance.
That's like I got to have, I've been having problems with my right leg. And sometimes when I go to walk, it's like my leg is,
heavy.
I can't move it. I can't pick it up.
Heavy.
And, it's gotten heavy. And so now I told my oncologist about it. And he said, well, have you been having any pain? I said, yeah, it was one of the first things that alerted me that something was wrong. And now he's wanting me to have nerve damage. He wants me to go and have a test to see if I have some nerve damage. Yeah.
I already went for that once. I'm like, I don't know if I need to go through that twice.
I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah. I'm like,
now
they should have lied better.
I went to vascular. I've had a vascular thing done on my arm because my arm was swollen, and my doctor wanted to make sure that it didn't have anything to do, because at that time I was still getting chemo, and he wanted to make sure it didn't have anything to do with that. So now if they go do the vascular thing with the little ultrasound and all that, I could deal with that. But that other crap.
That pays the thing now.
No.
I'm sure it didn't last 2 hours. It just felt like 2 hours. But no, 2 hours still sticks in my head.
Yeah. I felt like that the last time I went and had my PET scan. I know it didn't take 2 hours, but my God.
When it's a fake
stuff in that machine.
Now, that's another thing. When it's a that cage thing around, clocking over your head, I'm like, okay, really?
Oh, no, that's radiation.
Oh. I'm like, my eyes
are closed. Yeah, that's radiation.
I'm just like, no matter what, my eyes are closed.
PET scan is like, is a CT, but it does your whole body. But they didn't have, a lot of times I've seen that net thing, like what you're talking about, when people have.
I've done both, and I still see more in my future.
Well, that's the next thing that I want to talk about, is having scans. They call it in the cancer world. They call it scaniety, like anxiety. They call it scaniety because you have anxiety before you have your scan.
You should call it scan, being scanned, being black. Because it's always different.
No, call it being scanned, being fat and black.
That too. It's always different. Excuse me.
Very much, very much, very much so. The last time that I had to go get scanned, my oncologist said the test came back inconclusive, and have you gained weight? And I said, listen, yes, I've gained weight. And it's not because of me. It's my weight gain that I have now is not because of me eating. I eat maybe 1 to 2 meals a day. I told him, I said, if you put me in menopause and I can't get any hormone therapy, so my body is just haywire. So yeah. I told him, I said, okay, listen, let me just go to Emory. I'll just go to Emory and have, from now on, I'll go to Emory and have my PET scans done. And he was like, was that where you had one? Yeah, I had 2 of them done at Emory when I was at Emory. So
yeah,
that's what I had to do. So yeah, let's talk about being fat, black, and getting scammed.
Yeah, because I think the last one I did is when I had to put all the things on my head. I'm like, oh, good Lord. And of course, I'm like, and then of course, what they were looking for, I'm like, it's not happening now, so it's not going to show. So I'm like, oh, great. So I got to do this crap again.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And the thing about these PET scans, everywhere you go, every hospital is different.
Yep.
So the last time I had my PET scan done in January, I had to drink the contrast.
Ooh. Was it really sweet?
No. And then he says, oh, well, it has banana flavor. You can get banana, you can get strawberry or vanilla. I would suggest the vanilla because it doesn't leave an aftertaste.
No, I always have them put it in my IV. I always had to, no matter, they always had issues putting it in my IV. Mm-hmm. Oh, but when they can't get the IV, so it's like, everybody got to come in and do this. I'm like, why is it so hard to get an IV? Because somebody blew a vein, and the rest of my vein said, hell no. They don't trust y'all no more.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I do like about down at Kennestone Hospital is mm-hmm. that they will come in, if they can't get your veins, they will come in with the machine.
Yeah. So they can find that nerve.
And then
yeah.
they'll do, yeah, the finder thing, and they'll find a vein like that. And I'm like, thank you. Why don't most people, why don't other hospitals?
Because they think
the setup.
They can get it, or they or somebody's using the machine.
No, they just don't want to do it. A lot of hospitals don't want to do it because it costs too much damn money to get that little machine.
Well, that's true. But some of them, they'll have it, but they won't have one on every floor. So that's why I'm like,
yeah.
You know, they all have it, but it's not on that floor.
The hospital here in my town, they don't even have one.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Then you have to get a PICC line put in.
Ooh, the fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you love the little scar? Like, no matter how you can look at your skin and it's like, I remember that.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And I had a dude put a PICC line in my arm when I was in the hospital in 2021. And the night nurse came on third shift, and she was giving me some medication. She was giving me some pain meds, and she was giving it to me in the IV. You know that whole damn PICC line came out of my arm?
Ouch.
First of all, she shot it up. And then the medication just blew up my arm.
Yeah, she didn't.
Because
yeah,
it wasn't
going really into
the needle.
Yeah, she didn't. Yeah, she didn't do it. I keep a photo gallery. It's like, well, not just a gallery, a photo journal, I should say, when it comes to my health.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, when there's things that I, procedure stuff that I've gone through, and it's just flat out, you wouldn't believe me unless I had the photo proof.
Mm-hmm.
that's what, like, what I had to hit the, because when I remember when I was going, had to deal with during COVID, being in a hospital, I had to hit the, the I need someone to come help with my IV. My arm looks like a Flintstone drumstick. And they just start giggling.
Wow.
Like, okay. And the nurse comes in, Miss Kiss, what are you talking? Couldn't even finish your sentence. I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. My arm is already big. Why is it plumped up like a drumstick from the Flintstone?
Exactly.
Because the medication that they were giving me, because I had IVs in both arms, the medication in that arm blew the vein out. It wasn't the IV, it's the medication. So I'm like, yeah. So, of course, before you guys, I took a picture. Like, when this is over, I'll send it to you. It's funny. Because when people, people always say, I'm just being sarcastic, because I said, I always say, a Flintstone drumstick. I'm like, no. My arm looked like the drumstick that they gave that damn dino pet.
For a snack. Yeah, I believe you. I believe you. Michael used to do the same thing. I have so many, like, when he would go in the hospital and they would give him an IV or something like that. And the last two times before COVID, he had to go in the hospital. They bruised him up so bad. And they gave him a, what they call that damn thing? When they get the blood out of your wrist, air gas.
Ooh.
And he was so mad. He was so mad. And
what is it called by people who had to, that's cut you off. When COVID was bad, they only want only people who are, what was the term that they used? To go out, everybody else to stay in the house. Oh, can I think of it? Like, we are the, like, valuable people or what? I cannot think of the term. That
essential.
Yeah, essential.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I have a picture for that. This is what they, you know, over here in Houston, this is what they do to the essential people. When I say, My chubby cheek face was three times my face, normal face. Thank you. I can. Can I not be essential?
That's what I never understood. What made who essential and who wasn't? Because if you
people who work in healthcare, they're like, for mainly if you work in healthcare, because they didn't really want people in buses, when it got really bad, but they were shutting a lot of stuff down. But like if you worked in the hospitals, nursing homes, so like that's what like all the grocery stores, those for like just essential needs. To where the grocery stores, they would only let like maybe 10 people at a time until they count all of them gone, so that way they can bring more people in and do things like that. Or how they would do delivery, but there was only pickup. To where it's just like they would put it in the trunk. They ain't going nowhere near the back seat. But, when it came to those type of, that's what they meant by essential. And unfortunately, I was a nurse aide, so I was essential. Essentially screwed.
Mm. Yeah, that COVID, that stuff was.
So much stuff for me. I'm just like, how can you be that stupid? I would see some coworkers to where What judgment? Where is your brain? You have more insight than the normal person because we're around people who are dealing with COVID, who are dying from COVID or have died. Mm-hmm. So we have more insight than the normal person that all they have is what they see on the TV screen.
Mm-hmm.
And you decide, oh, you're not going to get vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
While you're working around in a building where there's COVID. We've already lost patients and coworkers have died from COVID. And
yep.
You don't want to believe the hype, even though you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And the COVID shot, as everybody explained,
mm-hmm.
even it's like the flu shot. There's gonna be some years you'll feel the side effects from the flu shot, and other times you won't.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's a vaccine. That's what that does.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of goes with the shot. But you got that choice, or as you see, the other choice is not taking. And this one coworker chose not to, got herself sick, her children sick, husband sick.
Mm.
I'm like,
mm.
Are you really? And I'm like, how do you want people to feel sympathy? You, Lord, strength.
Yeah, I don't know. It thinking when you do that, you get COVID and you don't really know where you get it, and then you give it to other people around you.
Now, when I initially got sick, I got
mm-hmm.
it was in the during COVID. It was the doctors called it a super virus. My super virus was created because we had to create a COVID unit. So we had to move our isolation patients to a different hall until we make
mm-hmm.
room for them. And unfortunately, isolation patients, the key word, isolation,
mm-hmm.
this is what I was working at, was a small building. So they put four different isolations in one room.
Oh,
and of course people are like, I don't know what you do it. So I would get called, and if I want an insubordination on my file, sure, I say no. I'm just like, two of the people I don't have to touch. There's one that's like very, very rarely needs assistance, but there are two that are total care. They need to be touched. So I'm thinking, like, okay, get in, do what I got to do, and get out, take the so-called PPE, a.k.a. trash bag, off of me,
mm-hmm.
and be done. No, didn't know I had an autoimmune disorder. So every
oh,
one
wow.
of those infections created a super infection.
Virus.
And with
mm-hmm.
that super infection caused an exit wound. It built up to a point to where it was going through my body to where it decided it needed to make an exit wound. And that was
wrong. Yeah. Wow.
So that meant 3.5 months bed rest. But I was like, okay, I knew what to do. I knew, like, having to rotate so many hours. I can sit up for, like, maybe a couple of hours out of the day, all that kind of stuff. But my problem was, after I thought it healed, I was like, okay, fine. No, I started getting complications from it. So even though the wound healed, the issue from all the virus, from all the viruses, it's still, my body hasn't finished absorbing all that crap. So I next thing you know, I have arthritis. I'm like, what the hell? I have this arthritis, I have this, and then I have, this is starting to, then this is a, what on earth? So it's like it's still going through. And I'm just like, then while I'm dealing with all that, then I caught COVID.
Oh, Lord.
Exactly. Oh, sorry, that's the neighbor's dog. I can't hide from that stuff.
Oh, no, you're good. You're good. You're all right. Wow. I remember my mom had, she had a virus. It was an infection, and it was, it had an exit wound, and it was so deep when it made it, it had to be passed, you know, debrided. It had to be debrided.
Yes, they did that, because when I got sick with that, this was when it was at its highest level. The hospital was full of COVID. That's why I had double IVs in each arm, because they're trying to hurt, so get me out of the hospital. So they did the debriefing. So I had to, and you talking about you lifting your wheelchair, I had to do the packing myself. There was nobody.
Ooh.
And I work in healthcare. Nope, I couldn't get nobody to, like, help me with that. I had to do it myself.
Mm. Oh, God. That's painful.
Yep.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
You just, I mean, you have to, you just never know what somebody, when you look at a person, what they're going through or what they've been through, you know?
Yeah, that's why I say when it comes to cancer, that's why I say when you tell stuff about your cancer, I'm like, no, have I been diagnosed with cancer? No. Have I had, thank you. Have I been, okay, I have the crap that turned things into cancer, so I went through that treatment to try to get rid of it before it became cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
I've dealt with that aspect, but it's still, even though I'm on a foreign side of a cancer diagnosis, I know what it feels like when your life was one way, and then all of a sudden it's like tornadoed, and it's something completely different now.
So it'll never be the same.
It'll never
be the same again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's one thing I tell people, it's like, you have to think about it. And when it snowed here in Texas and in Houston, to where it was ice-packed snow everywhere, I was my normal worker, bending over, dealing with hard-headed residents and doing, you know, feeding them, feeding the staff, doing all that stuff. And then not even four months later, I can't even bend down.
Wow. Wow. It's amazing. I mean, learn all that stuff over again.
The mental aspect, people got to overcome. But it's always brushed under.
It is.
That's one thing about this era in life now. People are more to the point of hiding it. It's more dealing with it. It's shown that it's okay to be able to admit you're dealing with something.
Exactly. And that's a good thing. I believe that's a really good thing.
Yeah.
Well,
it should always be that way.
It should be. Well, I'm going to have to end the show. This was a good discussion.
Yeah,
I don't want us to get cut off. I don't want it to cut us off, but thank you for helping me along the way with this. I really appreciate it.
I can always tell you. I got you. Just always listen. Just hit me up.
All righty. I appreciate that. Thank you. All right. Thank you, y'all, for listening to another episode of Night Talks with Fasha. Here's my special guest, Ms. Deidre Gibbs of HPS Magazine. I am your girl, your diva, Fasha. I want y'all to have a great weekend. Enjoy your Sunday. It's going to be cold. It's supposed to be cold tonight in Georgia. So wrap up a little bit, turn the heat on. Yeah, go outside, still put on a coat and enjoy yourself. Go get grounded. It's good for you. I did today. I didn't hug a tree, though. But I went out into the sunshine. So,
yay.
That's a good thing. But anyway, you all have a great weekend. And we will be back next week. We're taking a day. I'm taking Friday off. It's going to be Easter weekend, so we're taking that day off. And I will be back April the 5th. And we will have special guest Marquesha Dudley. And she will be talking about her two businesses. And after that, we will have Unique from Juicy Peaches. So, have a great weekend and see you later.
Peace.